Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, I was doing something that Big R does often, which is not being at a live music venue, but rather just traveling. So I traveled. Last night, I traveled to Nashville, where I took in a concert. I went to Fall Out Boy and Machine Gun Kelly at Bridgestone Arena. Had a fabulous time with my son, Tristan. And we will unpack that and other things. But before we do, Piper, you have a bit of business to lay on us, because I feel like the sponsorships are just raining down on the Happy Ramp Podcast right now. It's literally raining money on us. So
say, when you say raining down, all I can think of is like modern worship songs. You know, I feel like I should be dancing in a river, and there's should be tongues of flame or something like that. I don't know.
Well, just, of course,
let's mix some metaphors.
Yeah, if I've learned nothing from modern worship, it's that things should always be raining down on you. So in our case, it's money. You know, and other people along the East Coast, it's actual rain at this point. So, Piper, tell us about our sponsor.
Yeah, so let me rain down an opportunity on all the churches and church planters and others looking for venues for any sort of church meeting, and that's Noah's Event Venue, same people who have sponsored us the last couple weeks. They have venues all across the country in almost every major metro area. And so Noah's Event Venue is a place where they work with businesses and all sorts of stuff, but they have a whole setup just for churches who are looking to expand, looking to plant, looking to start a new campus. And it's basically an all-inclusive package. So think like a cruise ship for churches, where you pay one price and you get all of your needs. So all your audiovisual needs, all the parking, all the classroom space. They even have cafe space. Not as cool as Ronnie's church. We covered that previously. But
they have a snack bar, though? That's
yeah,
really
there's no snack bar with empty shelves for people to not eat at. There's a kitchen prep area, which is where, you know, you can bring your crock pots and do your chili cook-offs and things like that. We are getting into the fall season where such things are essential. There's a parking lot where you can do your forthcoming trunk or treats. All the essential church things. So if you go to noaheventvenue.com/church, and it's Noah just like dude in the Bible who built the ark, noaheventvenue.com/church. They have all the details. Find the one in your area. Check it out. If you are at a church that's growing and you're not the pastor or you're not the decision maker, just pass the information along to them, because if you're meeting in some crappy elementary school that smells like half-spoiled milk and like children's underwear, then you probably want to check this out, because it's quite an upgrade for you.
And well, there it is, Piper. It's Noah's Event Centers or
Noah Event Venue.
Noah Event Venue. My bad. I was paying attention. I was paying rapt attention.
Piper, I have a question for you, man.
Can you promo read?
Suss something out for me, man. How do they provide like a parking lot? Like I'm misunderstanding. If I need a space, how do they deliver me a parking lot for my trunk or tree?
Well, you would be using the venue that has parking at it.
Oh, okay. They supply the actual venue.
Yeah, like this whole thing is the venue. So it's not like bring you the microphones or the whatever. Like this is a building that has a large meeting room, and it can be yuppied up or hipstered up or like stained glassed up, or you know, the only thing it doesn't have that feels essential to church is nasty old carpet. I saw no nasty old carpet in their pictures.
Could that be an option though? Like if you wanted that, you know, if you were going for that like Baptist church circa 1989 feel, could you get them to provide that?
I don't know if they could provide it, but here's the thing. Like it's just like a nice hardwood floor. So most churches who are meeting in temporary venues are used to, like they have a crew who comes in early to set up. So you could bring your carpets and just roll them out. Do that an hour or two beforehand. It's going to smell nice and musty in there when people show up. Just get people in that spirit of worship, and let the altar calls rain down.
Piper, let me ask you this, man. Do they provide you with sermons to preach if you don't have anything kind of in your back pocket, just waiting to unleash on Sunday?
No, that sounds like a business venture for you to start, Ron. Sermons for those who are ill-prepared by Ronnie Martin.
Ron wouldn't write the sermons, though. He would source them from some other means. But I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves, boys. That's a That could be topical material for later in the program. But
that was a transition, boys. But you didn't pick up on it, so let's just move on.
Well, baby, I want to stay in this church space because I have a substance church question because I'm just fascinated by that whole thing. So regarding parking lots, like, given that your church is sort of the paradigm of like the hipster church experience, like where are, like, do your people drive cars or are they riding like vintage, like Schwinn's from the, you know, from the early 80s or the 50s and like parking them somewhere? Like, what does that look like at your church?
Do you have parking reserved for fixed gear bicycles?
Fixed gear bicycles. That was it. That was the joke I was looking for.
Dude, you got it all wrong, man. I'm, you know, we don't have a lot of hipsters at the church. We just kind of mask ourselves like that. We just have a regular parking lot, right? I'm looking out right now. You know, we got like, you know, Toyota Scions or however you pronounce that. We got Ford Edges. We got all the standard fare. In fact, baby, I mean, given what you drive, if you came to our church, Big T, you'd be one of a kind.
Oh, interesting. Well, as an Enneagram 4, it's essential that I'd be one of a kind
everywhere.
So,
I think you need to reveal to the listeners what you drive. I think this may have come up in a previous episode, but my recollection is that at the last live event we did, Ron and I were both sort of
intrigued.
Intrigued. Somewhat aghast, taken aback, especially because it's well known that you used to drive a large old Cadillac that was just, I mean, it was like riding on a cloud to be in it.
It was like riding in a living room.
Yes.
You know, it was a living room on wheels, and I loved that thing, man. I still do. So the Caddy is still in the family. I've sold it to my son Tristan when he turned 16. He bought the Cadillac from me. So in fact, he drove it to school this morning. So the Caddy is still in our garage, still in our family, still in our hearts. But I bought a Fiat 500, a sporty little stick shift, and it's a 6-speed turbocharged little motor. So I just wanted something different. I hadn't had a stick since high school, and it's super fun. It's a lot of fun to drive. It's a good little commuter car there for, you know, all the hustle and bustle of Jackson, Tennessee. You know, all those hours I spend commuting, and you know, the Fiat is a nice way to spend those hours.
How many Fiats do you see cruising around Jackson, Tennessee?
Not too many, man. Not too many, I have to be honest.
It's one of a kind. You're one of a kind with that thing, aren't you, man?
It's the Enneagram 4 thing, Big R. You know, I had to be one of a kind, and this seemed like an elegant way to do it. So I appreciate you guys taking an interest in my car life, though. You know, I feel cared for in that. So, Big R, as a man of the cloth, you're doing your job. And just as a stand-up dude, you're also doing your job. But Let me tell you, boys, where I didn't feel especially unique. And that was last night at Bridgestone Arena at the Fall Out Boy concert, because while most concert audiences are like really, really easy to pigeonhole, you know, like if you were to go to a Bon Iver concert, you would see like 4,000 of the same person. Fall Out Boy is not like that. I feel like they're very inclusive. I feel like they exclude almost no one from their audience. And it was a tough one to like put my finger on, but it was a really great experience. Nevertheless, I had a blast. Tristan and I had a ball last night. It was a good time.
And so I'm just going to go ahead and reveal my ignorance because we're nothing if not authentic on this podcast.
Yeah.
What kind of music does Fall Out Boy do?
Dude. Okay. Yeah. So it's like early 2000s pop punk. So that
just
was kind of
the distinct Green Day without any of the legitimacy.
Dude, now why do you say that? I don't understand that because I'm not a music expert.
My favorite Ron is Snobby Music Ron. Carry on.
Snobby
this is
Music
fantastic.
Ron is phenomenal. Also, like, threatened by other musicians, Ron is amazing. So I want us to stay in this, man. Certainly not
threatened by Fall Out Boy, boys, if I have
to. I think you are, though. I think you're a little threatened by Fall Out Boy. So, Ron, I have several questions for you in follow-up. How are they inferior to Green Day? And also, like, why are you threatened by Fall Out Boy?
Well, I wouldn't say they're inferior to Green Day. What Green Day spawned was, like, sort of 1,000 sort of B-level copies, and Fall Out just happens to be one of those. They're fine. It's great. Beautiful.
That's the most condescending "they're fine" imaginable, isn't it, Piper?
It's, oh, I know. I'm just
That's like a 10.
I listen to neither Green Day. I'm condescending about Green Day. I listen to neither Green Day or Fall Out Boy. So
I wish grinning was audible because I'm smiling so big at Ron's complete dismissal of Fall Out Boy. I mean, and
that's wonderful.
I love dismissing things, but it's even better when Ron does it.
Baby, I want to ask you this because I'm fascinated. How small does a band's audience have to be to give them legitimacy to you? Like,
it's not me. So I'm speaking from sort of I would be speaking from almost like a journalist's point of view here.
Right.
You know, nobody really regards Fall Out Boy as a band that's had a lot of influence on other bands, is a better way to put it. You know, so whereas Green Day kind of came in and they were like the first band post Nirvana to bring it back to sort of like being a little more punk than Nirvana was, but right. sort of like, they sort of spawned this, hey, you know, we're a band that grew up, you know, loving like old school 70s and 80s punk, and we're influenced by the Ramones, all that stuff. So they were the first to find some success. And then what happened on the heels of Green Day was it just spawned all these other bands that came in on the heels of their
success. Yeah, so you had a bunch of like, I don't know, bands like Yellow Card and Coheed and Cambria and all these bands with like a kind of a high-pitched voice front man and like a really, really up-tempo sort of thing. But
sure.
Yeah, so... Yeah, despite Fall Out Boy's like lack of ability and total lack of influence on the industry, it's, you know, there were still like 20,000 people there last night.
They're huge. They're massive. Yeah.
Yeah, they're massive, and it was a very like hard to pin down 20,000 people. You know, there were your usual assortment of like trying too hard Nashville dads, you know, and like the leather jacket with just like a few too many zippers on it, and. in fact, I had a fascinating conversation with Tristan. So we were in the concourse right before. So Machine Gun Kelly opened up for Fall Out Boy. He's a white rapper that to be fair, neither of us had like a lot of experience with or interest in. So we were in the concourse right before Machine Gun Kelly, and this Nashville dad walked by with his son, and he had like very meticulously coiffed hair. Like a leather jacket with some zippers, Chuck Taylors, and Tristan kind of exchanged a look with me, and I gave him a look, and I was like, do you think that guy's trying too hard? He's like, yeah, for sure. And he was like, either the hair or the jacket would have been fine, but the hair and the jacket together is too much. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. You know, that's really it. So, these
so
things are
so in other words, the guy can look cool, but he needs to freeze a little bit if he wants to look cool.
Dude, yeah, he needs to be cold. And to be fair, it was like a meat locker in the arena. I wore jeans and a t-shirt, and I froze. Poor Tristan had shorts and a t-shirt on, and I wanted to buy him like a $60 Fall Out Boy hoodie to just stave off, you know, frostbite at some level for him. But, yeah, super fun show. You know, I think Fall Out Boy is more fun to listen to than Green Day. And I don't know. I don't know if Green Day is still like filling arenas now. I've kind of lost track of them, but... but we had a blast.
Isn't that true for a lot of, like, I feel like there's a lot of bands, like bands that are influential, not necessarily the most enjoyable. It's like,
yeah,
they were the first to arrive in a space to do something creative, but other people turn it into a more sort of like mainstream palatable product.
Yeah.
Well, that's not Green Day. That's not Green Day. So.
Well, right. Not you. What do you mean? They're not fun or they're not mainstream and palatable or what?
No, they're,
or they are that.
They're all of that. I mean, you can't really get more mainstream or palatable than Green. I mean, American Idiot is one of the biggest selling records of the last like 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah. Gigar, let me ask you this. Is there like a pop punk outfit that is like, that would be palatable to Big R artistically, that you would not have to hang your head around your like music industry friends to say, I listen to fill in the blank from the early 2000s, like kind of pop punk aesthetic, or does that just not exist?
Well, it just kind of never changes, right? So, like, I'm looking at these two skater dudes right now outside of my, like, window here at the church, right? And, like, on one hand, they look like they're 40.
They're elders at Substance, right?
Yes. On one hand, they look like they're 40 years old, but I think they're probably 18 because everybody has beards now.
Okay.
So, you know, man, it's like it's the outfit never changes. That's sort of the consistency of punk, right? It's just jeans, Chuck Taylors and t-shirts. It's just sort of looking like you don't care. Now you can tell, like the guy you described last night, you know, so when people get older and they start buying like nicer versions of that, then it becomes more of a costume than a lifestyle, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It was definitely a costume for this guy. So let me run another people watching thing by you that happened. Two things actually, and then we'll move on. So we were in an upper level section, up pretty high. It was really relaxing. We didn't have to like stand or dance around or do like the normal concert things. But like two rows down from me, there was a lady about our age with like a young girl, looked like she was in her 20s, who was very tiny and had clearly had way too much to drink, and who was just sitting there kind of catatonically. And midway through Fall Out Boy's set, this woman, you know, again, we're in a crowded arena. There were 20,000 people to choose from. She turns like to me and she goes, I need help getting her out of here.
Wow. And,
yeah. I was just like, what is it about my appearance that says like, I'm the responsible dad in this scenario, you know,
the lack of too many zippers on your jacket. And
exactly.
Your hair may be carefully cared for, but nobody would call it coiffed.
No, that's true. Definitely not coiffed. You know, nothing coiffed about it. So, so I helped her get her severely inebriated friend out of Bridgestone Arena. And the other thing was, yeah, I'm a hero, basically.
Dude, the story just keeps getting better, Big T.
Dude, the other thing that happened, this was really funny for Tristan to observe. Like one row ahead of us, there was a guy and a girl on a date. And they were probably in their mid to late 20s. And it was clear that they were crazy about each other. Like they were all over each other. And it was clear that this girl was like way too much for this guy, in that she was like fractionally hotter than him. And also like way more into dancing around. She was super keyed up about the music, about the concert. And it was this great dynamic in which she wanted to dance around a whole bunch and be super animated. And he didn't. And it was just 2.5 hours of like absolute agony for this guy. Although you could tell he was also like really happy to be with her. And Tristan and I were like texting each other about them right behind them and saying things like, I give it a week, you know, she's way too much for him. But those are the kinds of things you get to observe at a concert. You know, you're paying for more than the music. You get a night of premium people watching out of the deal.
Yeah, I feel like that one's going to – there's going to be a fight in the Uber on the way back to wherever they came from after that, because she's going to be real frustrated at how much of a drag he was.
Oh, totally. She's going to ask questions like, you just seem like you really weren't into it. And I don't know, like, are you not into me? And he's going to be like, oh, now I have to defend myself. And yeah, it's just going to – the whole thing's going to devolve. So – fun, man. Fun to watch those scenarios.
They've already broken up, Big T.
I'm sure they've broken up, yeah. Maybe they're listeners, so if they're listening, you know, Ronnie, I'd love to hear the end of the story.
Ronnie raised a really important question off the pod, and that is, at any point, could you actually hear the band over all the people singing along?
The answer is
dude,
no.
Yeah. So we could, and I think it was a function of how high up we were sitting. So it's kind of like when you sit in the back in church. You can't really hear everybody singing during worship. It was sort of the same way in that, you know, we were near the, like the back of the room as it were. And, you know, so I felt like, you know, there were a couple numbers for Fall Out Boy, like Sugar We're Going Down. Some of the huge numbers, there was a lot of like sing along happening, and that was fun. But yeah, by and large, I would say, you know, people were listening more than they were singing, and they play a lot of new stuff, a lot of stuff off their new record. So maybe there wasn't like the familiarity with all the lyrics that there would have been. There was.
Because listeners should know that Ronnie loves nothing more than going to a concert and it being like a karaoke sing-along. That's his favorite thing. Right up there with pop punk in general.
Which is funny because it's not his favorite thing at all. So I want to ask this. Ron, have you ever been to a show where you did sing-along? Like in spite of yourself, you found yourself like swept up in the moment and you belted out some lyrics.
No, I never have done that ever once. I've never sang to any band at any live show. No.
You've never sang to any band at any live show. Like, did you barely sing at your own band's live shows?
Barely.
Like, yeah, barely. Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna give you a little
college. If I could put the vocals on backing tracks, I would have done that. So, yeah,
I love it.
It's the non-live performance, live performance stuff that
exactly. It's meta. It's a big joke. It's a bigger joke. Boys, speaking of things that are confusing and kind of a joke, something confusing went down in my professional life this week, in that apparently there's an institution called Union Seminary, which is in no way associated with Union University, which is my place of employ. the university where I teach. And Union Seminary tweeted out something heretical, and I had several people kind of reaching out to say, like, dude, what's up with your school? So just to, this is kind of a PSA for the audience. That's not my school. I have nothing to do with Union Seminary and their views on inerrancy, which seem
so. Union University, Jackson, Tennessee, does in fact believe in biblical inerrancy. Just to clarify,
that's right.
Okay,
yeah, that's right. And we believe also in everything else good. So everything else that you believe in, we also believe in. So you know, you should send your kids to Union, have a major in journalism. They'll have an amazing time.
So hold on, Chad. So you're saying, yeah, dude, that everything that's ever been good in the world, you believe in. So please leave me alone.
Dude, that's correct. And yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Big R. I don't want to oversell it, you know, and I would be remiss. I feel a little hesitant to make that bold of a statement. But yes, I'm comfortable saying that everything that's ever been good in the world, as an institution, we affirm those things. So parents should feel comfortable sending their children to us for 4 years.
Mm. I mean, that sounds reasonable. I'm starting the enrollment paperwork for my kids right now because, I mean, what better selling point is there than literally everything good in the world?
I know, and I feel like that should be on the brochure, not to tell the people in university marketing really how to do their jobs. But you know,
yeah, they really undersell it. You know, they talk about like great Christian education, liberal arts, this
community, yeah,
community, great faculty, campus, exactly. You know, facilities.
Just simplify it. Just say everything that's ever been good.
They really need to sum that up into just everything good.
Heaven on earth, basically utopia. You know, not to oversell it. I would be remiss.
I don't think we're overselling anything. I mean, that's
I don't think we are either. You know, I've been here for years, and I've got the lay of the land now. You know, I've done a lot of observing in those years, and you know, I feel comfortable with that as a faculty member. So, boy, speaking of jobs that people could have, this one is fascinating. Piper, you shared a link a couple of weeks ago that Ron and I both looked at, and we both honestly thought it was satirical. But the job posting, this was for a ministry job. It was a church looking for a pastor who would, quote, preach word for word sermons from other famous pastors. And this is a real thing. Like, this isn't a joke. And you sent another link to a Relevant magazine piece that had actually a picture of Ferdy, Stephen Furtick. And before we get into the content of this topic, I want to talk about how much Stephen Furtick is trying to look like Drake at this point.
And succeeding.
And succeeding. So the more sort of severe his high top fade gets, the more grown in his 5 o'clock shadow gets, and the tanner he gets, I feel like Ferdy is a, like, he has a membership at one of these places that's called like Hollywood Tans, like Tans with a Z. And it's in a strip mall. It's next to like a Quiznos and a Ross. And Ferdy goes there, I feel like, you know, 3 to 4 times a week to work on that tan. So the tanner he gets, the more he looks like Drake. Am I right about this, you guys?
You almost can't tell the difference. I mean, it's so similar from like the haircut. I mean, Ferdy has a little more hair than Drake. You know, Drake keeps it pretty shaved down, you know, but I mean, other than that, man, they kind of have the same face, you know, they're like dudes that work out. It really is uncanny.
Let me ask you this, Vigar. In your opinion of both of them, who has better theology, Drake or Stephen Furtick?
I mean, based on the last like three Drake singles as opposed to the last three Ferdy sermons, especially the one that got all that hype from a few weeks ago when he said, like, what did he say? He said something crazy about God. What did he say, Pipe? Like,
Am I supposed to be listening to Stephen Furtick on a regular basis?
Everybody like posted the quote, you know, on Twitter. It was like everybody was saying, you know, Ferdy made some crazy comment about it was absurd, like, you know, I don't know. Like, just think of the most absurd, like, untruth, you know, from scripture that you could like pull from scripture, and he just said, like, God, you know, God doesn't know something that God obviously knows or something.
And, was that also the sermon where he was leading a teenage boy around on the stage by a neck? Like, yeah, but the kid had, like, shackles around his neck, and he was leading him by a chain?
I never saw that. that at all, man.
Yeah, that was a recent. So, I mean, we've got Ferdy on the futon from, you know, a couple months ago. That was an all-timer. And then,
dude, neck shackles and a young boy. I feel like in today's climate, that's probably not a good move.
In the end slavery movement of all of us, that may not be the image to put on your church website.
Exactly. I mean, to answer your question there, Big T, you could probably derive a little more theology out of a Drake tune just to be funny about it. But, what's weird about Ferdy? I mean, you know, when I see those kind of antics, like, dude, he's just bored, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he's literally just bored.
Yeah. He's got all the money in the world, all the success.
When you believe that God doesn't know stuff, you kind of run out of things to be interested in. After a while, you're like, well, used him up.
Well, let's do a slavery reenactment.
Yeah, let's shackle one of our youth group kids and call it a sermon. Yeah.
I know who knows stuff. Me. Yeah. Dude, it would be amusing to go to Ferdy's church, though. All kidding aside, like, it would, if you're just looking for sheer entertainment, something to do on a Sunday morning. I don't know. I kind of wish we could go there undercover for like a month and just like do live shows from the parking lot afterward. I don't know. Maybe somebody can fund that. Maybe we've got to
pull like a Driscoll at MacArthur's conference, you know, where he shows up and like sells books out of his trunk. We could.
Dude, Ferdy would arrest. We'd get arrested. I mean, is it worth it to get arrested?
Maybe that's what that kid was doing. Maybe the kid was like selling some things out of the trunk of his car.
Ferdy
literally put him in shackles and like a neck thing and led him around on stage.
Maybe do you think there's a chance if we did that could happen to us? Because that could happen, are you kidding? I would be there this Sunday.
Maybe I feel like book sales for the Big T Ronnie Martin, you know, co-written projects would go through the roof with that kind of publicity.
Oh gosh, man, if we could
do this as like a Happy Rant sit-in, our download numbers will explode.
Dude,
are we willing to get pulled on stage and get a noose around our neck and be dragged around with a slavery reenactment by Ferdy? That's the question. Are we willing to go through that kind of humiliation? Because Ferdy probably comes out and says, all right, man, you have two options. I'm going to call the cops or I'm going to bring you up on stage.
I'm going to make you an object lesson. One of my quote-unquote sermons. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I would absolutely do that.
I would do it too.
You would say, Ferdy, I want to go. I want to be up on stage, like Pipe. You're saying, you look at us and say, make sure you're filming all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Be like, are you getting this? That's the question. This is, are we live streaming this? Is it live to tape? Like, how do we do this? And when can I get the footage to share?
Dude, so how big of a ripple would that make news wise in the Reformed world if John Piper's kid was at Ferdy's church at all? Like that in and of itself is worth a Gospel Coalition article, I think.
Maybe two.
So Piper's there, maybe two, maybe a series, you know.
Well, it'd have to be like a point counterpoint, like why I should be there, why I shouldn't be there, and both of them have to be at least 82,000 words.
Well, of course, and like Brett McCracken would be arguing that you should be there. Like
Nine Reasons Why Piper Should Have Been at Ferdy's Church by Joe Carter.
Yeah, Joe C. is going to write the Nine Reasons recap. And then maybe KDY is across the table from Brett McCracken on the point counterpoint, but
yeah, he would be like ways that we need to think about Piper's antics at Ferdy's.
Ways to think about Piper's involvement in Ferdy's church.
How to think about Piper's neck shackles.
Right. And then Jared C. Wilson would be like, you know, God's still in charge, even though his children stray to other churches or
gospel centered neck shackles.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like that would send shockwaves through the Reformed community. I think we need to try this. We need to make this happen. And, you know, I for one, I'm just curious to see what a Sunday morning looks like there at Ferdy's Church. What's the name of Ferdy's Church, by the way? Do we have a name for it?
I believe it's Elevation Church.
That makes total sense. Boys, question. Where do you think Ferdy falls on this whole, like, Nike kind of cause marketing, you know, kerfuffle that's all the rage to talk about and that I really can't talk about for employment related reasons. Where do you think Ferdy falls on that? Do you think?
Oh, he's absolutely a Lululemon guy.
Yeah, well, he rides with Lululemon for sure. So until Lululemon signs a controversial endorser, it's Ferdy's going to be fine. But like, do you think those kind of mentions make their way into like a Ferdy quote unquote sermon on a Sunday morning?
No, not a chance. He will spew all sorts of heresy because that doesn't drive people away from his church. But he will not say one controversial thing about society because that will be the wedge that splits things.
Dude, that's true. Yeah, you could lose like customers over that. So
God may not know everything, but we're not touching Nike with a 10-foot pole.
Dude, yeah, he can't do anything that's going to cost him attendees.
Yeah, for
by
sure.
By attendees, you mean dollars.
Right. Well, you said it.
Yeah. Season ticket holders. I mean, attendees.
That's right. Somebody's gonna return their seat license in the upper deck.
You have to buy a PSL to go to Elevation Church. You get a personal seat license, and you know the waiting list is quite long. It's like Lambeau Field. You know, somebody has to die to free up a.
And everybody thinks they're a stockholder when they're not. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's a lot like Lambeau Field.
A lot of weird things happening in the stands. People oddly dressed.
Yeah. So speaking of oddly dressed, Piper, you sent a picture along with a link about this Nike kerfuffle, and the headline was, so I want to talk about the headline, but then I want to deconstruct the photo itself. It said Alabama pastor cuts up Nike gear during sermon. So at some church in Alabama, and it had to be Alabama, right? I mean, if this had happened in like, I don't know, Illinois or like New Hampshire, it's just fractionally less funny. But Alabama,
yeah, I mean,
pastor,
like the panhandle of Florida is the only other place this would make total sense.
Oh, totally. Yeah, this probably happened in who's the author that we talked about a couple of episodes ago?
Frank McKinney? Is that it?
This could happen in Frank McKinney's church where he's an usher. I feel like this might happen. But Alabama pastor cuts up Nike gear during sermon. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this played well with his audience. And Piper, you made some really incisive comments, though, about this man's attire. And I want you to expound on that.
Well, first, I would like to say that I lost count of the number of pleats on his oversized chinos. They were bunchy, which made it hard to just... It was hard to quantify the number of pleats, but they're also like these were not like nice crisp business chinos. They're almost like parachute chinos.
Yeah, it's a really interesting like genre of chinos that I think I haven't seen really chinos like this since the 90s. And usually when I talk about the 90s, it's in like a reverential kind of tone because I do love that decade. But like. The super pleated, billowy khaki was a distinct 90s thing, and it was worn by, like, seminary students, theology nerds, that type of person. And here this guy is with heavily pleated chinos. And it looks to me, Piper, and you can verify this. There's something like billowing out of his pocket. What do we think that is?
Oh, I think that is his pocket. Like, people pull their pockets out to show that they're empty. His pocket is actually like inside out, which tells me one of two things. I mean, the likely option is that, you know, he very enthusiastically ripped the Nike gear out of his pocket as like the great reveal, you know, because it looks like a Nike like sweatband, like a headband, which also makes perfect sense for somebody who dresses circa 1996.
What he did there is he found the cheapest piece of Nike gear that he could find to then cut up. So
no way. This is the thing that he used like last Thursday doing his Richard Simmons workout. Like he owned this thing already. Like that's
I love
a,
it, man.
He is doing this like this is an act of repentance on his part, where he's like, you know, I've been with this company for so many years and no longer. Yeah. And then he takes the big black metal office scissors to this thing and hacks it to bits. And while the lady plays Just As I Am,
I love it, dude. I love it. Big R, are you going to be cutting up any Nike gear on stage at Substance?
We're taking it one step further, man. We're doing a we're doing a Nike bonfire. So we're
I love it.
Bring all the books they don't like or agree with and Nike gear. Put it all in a big bonfire, big pile, and we're gonna burn it. It's gonna be a party.
Dude, it's a community event at that point.
Oh, it's gonna be huge. Yeah, that's how we do community at Substance.
Nike s'mores.
Exactly, man. Exactly. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And I think people will appreciate it. I think they'll appreciate the stance that I'm taking.
Yeah. I mean, you're not afraid to address some of these issues.
I'm not afraid. I think it's going to tie us together. We're going to be better for it.
It's community, baby. And you know what? I have a follow-up question for you that I wasn't able to sneak in during the last topic because, full disclosure, I forgot that I wanted to ask it. my question is this. Would you take a pastoral job in which you did nothing but give somebody else's sermons? So the sermon is by a famous person. You download a manuscript every week and you just simply deliver it at your place of worship. Like, is that a job that would appeal to you, Big R?
I mean, let me just split it up in two.
You gotta parse this answer. There's a lot of nuance.
Yeah, I gotta parse it out, man. Yeah. So on one hand, the answer is that sounds like the greatest job of all time. It's like, so whose sermon do I want to preach this week? I mean, oh my gosh, man, I can't imagine anything like more effortless.
Which sermon do I not want to work on this week?
Exactly. I mean, are you kidding? Like, that sounds amazing. I think I'll do a little Tim Keller, a little Timmy K on Sunday, you know? Mm. Like, why not, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you just go, like, what they're proposing, like, in a job description like that is that at the end of the day, all that matters is entertainment. All that matters is that you have an orator who knows how to basically, get a crowd, draw them in, hype them up, entertain them. Because everything else is,
dude. So at that point, and I'm not being facetious. Like, what's the difference between that and just like plugging someone's iPhone into a speaker and just like playing a sermon? You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you just do that and save yourself the salary at that point?
Because you're not getting the experience of a guy you're not getting experience of a guy who knows how to, speak to a crowd, control a crowd. Get a crowd like sort of under his, under his influence and
The guy in the room, man.
They want that. They want that kind of a guy. They want that furtick. They want that guy who can not only speak but who can get some shackles, put it around some kid's neck, and lead him around the stage. They want that.
That's what they're looking for. Yeah. Aren't we all though? I mean, isn't that just kind of the indefinable sort of quantity that makes you a star in this business?
I keep waiting for Ray Ortland to just use a Stephen Furtick sermon, and he hasn't done it yet. I'm getting a little impatient.
Dude,
he keeps like writing his own sermons and doing this exegesis stuff and, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know what's great? Shackles. Can we just do some shackles in a futon, please, Ray?
No pipe. I didn't read all of the article, right? But it's weird because they didn't say like what's right. They didn't narrow it down to like you're only allowed to preach this, these eight people's sermons, right?
Oh no, the spectrum was like Tim Keller to Stephen Furtick. Basically they're like, if somebody maybe has heard of this guy, go ahead and use the sermon. He's sort of famous. So yeah, they're not a lot of definition there. The thing that fascinated me about that was their rationale. They're like, if a worship leader can get up there and just verbatim use a Chris Tomlin song, then why not do the same thing with a sermon? Like we sing other people's songs, why can't we preach other people's sermons? So let me throw that at you, playing devil's advocate here, Ron. How would you respond to that rationale?
Hard to argue with it.
Oh man, I don't know because I'm all about worship guys writing their own songs and being a little more creative with the process and a pastor needs to speak from his experience and he needs to speak from there's a bunch of different aspects that a pastor is actually preaching to the congregation as a way for God's word to shape them, inform them. And I guess you could make a bit of an argument about, worship leaders not just regurgitating the same thing week after week. I mean, I guess there's a particular kind of an argument you can make for that. But yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, should worship leaders have an obligation to create their own content?
Yeah, I think. Okay, so that brings you into another whole other thing, which is. Does a worship leader, do they just sit there and sing or do they need to lead in and out of the music? I think they need to lead in and out of the music by writing their own material to do that. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I thought their rationale was interesting because I clearly see the holes in their logic, but I'm like, you know what? If you're going to use bad logic, at least use it creatively. And they did.
But also worship leader too has to be a somewhat skilled musician. So that's also something else that they have to work on. And cause you can be a preacher, it's all over the map, right? You don't have to be a really compelling speaker to be a good preacher necessarily. You know, I mean, there's a lot of variances, I think. I don't know.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
I don't know anything. I got nothing. I got nothing.
Well, then you should just use somebody else's sermon next Sunday because you don't know anything.
To think about, so I got a friend that like once a year, but they know he's doing this, right? I think he does it like on the New Year's Eve, like the last Sunday of the month, whatever that falls on. I think he like his church knows that he like gets a classic like Spurgeon sermon and he just reads that. But it's like something that they all know that he's going to do. And I always just thought, well, dude, what if you start doing that like once a month and then what if like three times, like twice a month, you know, like that's just like how far do you take that?
Baby, I want to take this one step further. What if you did that on this show? Like, what if you read the transcript of someone else's podcast performance, like going to some of the old Trogues archives
and just start reading Trogues
and just start reading Trogues material and just say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to take one thing off my plate this week. And I don't even want to have to think about what I'm going to say on the happy rant. So I'm just going to print out like some Trogues manuscripts. I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure people.
Baby, what if we did this? What if we literally printed out a transcript of like the very first happy rant? And we all just like read exactly what like.
Dude, we read it dramatically, and like you did Trogues' part, Piper yes. did himself. I do myself. I would love it, dude.
Is there anybody less qualified to do Stephen L. Trogge than Ronnie Martin? I mean, just in terms of like personality difference, I don't know.
If he's the least qualified, then you and I are like 1A and 1B. We're right in that discussion. Yeah.
The problem is you guys would just be reading yourselves.
That's okay. We could do it with feeling, you know.
We could also switch it up and like I could do Ted and Ted could do me. It'd be sort of an idea like, you know, we've done 300 of these podcasts. How many how well can we impersonate the other?
Dude, if we could somehow do that, I think that would be so fresh, man. That would be really cool.
I agree. Yeah. I love that concept.
I have an idea, Ted. Here's an idea for one of your students. Offer them extra credit.
Yes.
To transcribe our first couple episodes.
All right, man. I'm on it. I'm gonna find someone.
Yeah, make it a class project for, you know, the next time you get a B, it gets bumped to an A if you do this.
Yep. I love it. I'm on it. And we need scripts, man. This is gonna be a little dramatic read, a little table read, boys.
Wow, that's huge, man. That's
the
huge.
History of the happy rant. I mean, it's a tip of the cap to the old days. You know, the early days of radio when you know, Jared C. Wilson and his tired wife and their 11 kids sat around the hearth and listened to me, Piper, and Trogues, you know, come into their living room once a week. So, you know, it's going to be fun for the whole family. And I will get on that immediately. Boys, we have done what we often and always do on this program, which is to wander to and fro throughout these topics. And I think this program had, you know, it much like that guy's khakis. You know, there was a lot going on in this program.
And hopefully it was not as empty as his pockets.
That's true. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have. Drink some Ligaris Roasters coffee. We haven't mentioned that in a while. It is the best coffee you'll ever have. LigarisRoasters.com. Buy only the Happy Rant Signature Blend. Do not buy the Church Curmudgeon Blend. He is now in business with Hector Ligaris, and I feel wounded by that, to be honest.
Yeah.
He needed to come and speak with me first. He hasn't done that, and I just feel angry and hurt. But LigarisRoasters.com, Happy Rant Signature Blend. We have wandered to and fro. Until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Life Audio presents Bridges with Monica Schmelter.
That we have an enduring hope that can't be taken away when we are in Christ. And to know that we have that, right? And eternal salvation, because this world can be so busy and so dark that we can forget that,
right?
Because sometimes I get caught in the trappings of what's going on in my life this moment. And while I have to recognize that, that's not it.
Continue listening on lifeaudio.com or wherever you find your podcast.